This is Sci-Fi Tech Talk.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Tech Talk, the podcast where we explore the technology of sci-fi. I'm Jeff Sire, and with me today is Julie Keel.
Hello, everyone.
And Mike McPeak.
Hi.
And this episode, we're covering the 2018 movie, Tau. And the IMDb synopsis is, a woman is held captive by a scientist in a futuristic smart house and hopes to escape by reasoning with the artificial intelligence that controls the house. That's pretty succinct compared to some of the descriptions we get.
It's actually reasonably complete description of the plot, unlike a lot of the IMDb synopses, you know.
Yeah, and I'm probably about two devices away from living this movie.
Yeah.
Well, because I got the Echo, Amazon Echoes, and Google Homes here, and I've got other smart devices. And you know, if these things ever became sentient, I'd be screwed because then they'd just be running my life.
Oh, I'm afraid they might already be sentient. So there you go.
They might be running my life too, as far as I know. But
yeah, this was an interesting one. It's a Netflix original, as far as I know.
Yeah, it is.
And it. When I went into it with absolutely no expectations and came out with a, that was not badly done.
No. Not a lot of characters. There's what, four?
Five, I think I count. Five, yeah, maybe. Five after she becomes kidnapped.
Right. Well, yeah, you had the two that weren't there very long. And then you had the three corporate people that kind of popped in and out, but
yeah,
not very often.
I didn't count them.
Yeah, so basically I had two main characters in there, and you know, that was about it. But yeah, it was I was entertained. It's like, you know, this isn't too bad. You know, you might quibble, and we always do, about, you know, some of the plot or the devices used therein, but it wasn't a bad movie, really. So
no, and I think it got you. There was certainly tension and drama and suspense, I guess, and you know, you definitely connected with at least one of the characters. I don't know. I hope you didn't connect with the other one. But unlike some of the ones we've seen, where people are just kind of flat, and it's like you're just kind of a third party observer. I found myself kind of, it wasn't sweating bullets or whatever, but it's like, you know, I really kind of cared how this came out at the end. You know, it's like, you have to know. This is like watching a movie called Castaway. I mean, you kind of know what the ending is going to be. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a movie. It would just be man gets stranded on an island and dies after months of, you know, hardship. You know, so a movie that's talked about, you know, being held captive in a smart home, you can pretty much write the final scene there. You know, and through various means, you know, is finally able to escape. Spoiler!
Well, yeah, and I was kind of expecting, and I wasn't necessarily disappointed, but it didn't bother me that much, because I got to thinking about the one Star Trek episode where Spock does the, I think it's often referred to as the word jujitsu on the computer to get it to have a meltdown. Well, she didn't exactly do this, but she conversed with the computer to get it to evolve, I guess you might say, or, you know, to want to have new experiences.
Yeah, it was interesting. That was actually one of the things we were talking about after this. The at some point in the movie, the psychopathic, you know, genius who had developed all of these things made the statement as far as Tau being the artificial intelligence that was, you know, running this smart home, was the fact that he was, you know, basically had to control the inputs that Tau was exposed to, because otherwise he would behave erratically. And, you know, to some extent, trying to figure out the takeaways from this movie and wondering if that one of the things that the takeaways is to some extent the difference between people and robots, at least to this point, is that we are unpredictable. And, you know, back to Star Trek, we are illogical. And that's what makes us a person, as they talk in the movie. as opposed to being an AI. So, yeah, it's, you know, if you're looking for, oh, sorry, Ken Ray, I'm stealing your tagline, the messages, morals, and meanings of this this movie, I'm not sure there are any, except, you know, just a cautionary tale like a lot of things these days as far as the power of technology and the things that it can do and the dangers of it. And, you know, that was probably about, there wasn't a lot of good side. Well, there was good side to it. The fact that Tao was able to evolve beyond his initial programming, I suppose. But,
well, I don't know that he necessarily was, that he evolved. Like,
true.
Yeah.
Well, he got exposed to more than the original parameters, I guess. And, you know, he was definitely becoming a sentient AI.
Oh, I think he was already sentient right at the start. Like, when we've had movies and books with AIs before, my thing that I always go to is, like, we always make assumptions that an AI will be just like us, and I don't think that there's necessarily any reason why we would even recognize it as intelligence, because we're coming from one point of view and making an assumption that anything intelligent has to be intelligent in the same way we are, and that's not necessarily true. But in this movie, it makes sense because they're patterning it on a human brain. So that, to me, made perfect sense that he should reason the same way that we do, you know, like, because it was, you know, sort of like the architecture of Tao's brain, for lack of a better word, was based on the human heart brain architecture that we're trying to extract from the subjects.
That,
so
yeah,
that made sense to me.
Yeah, like, and the
this
one
movie, as far as it being like far-fetched that a guy could do essentially a DARPA-level research project in his basement, that part of his aside, I thought this was a pretty kind of realistic movie.
Did you see what I tweeted today?
No.
Sci-Fi Tech Talk tweeted out a video from Boston Dynamics of one of their robots dancing. And I'm
God,
like, I really didn't need to see this the day after watching Tao. I just really didn't.
No, you put Tao inside a dancing dog Boston robotic unit there, and yeah, we can all start freaking out now.
Yeah. To be perfectly honest, one of the pieces of technology that we should talk about is the little Quidditch drones, little snitch from the Quidditch game drones.
Yeah.
Those were an interesting bit of technology that I don't think exists like that today, not to do all of the things that they could do.
We have parts of it. In theory, yeah, they were, you know, part of them was like Roombas.
Right,
basically.
Yeah, and that was I had a problem with. These things were like the size of golf balls, basically, and they were trying to, you know, mop up a murder scene. So I'm like, yeah, not really. But aside from that, just about every other technology that was in there is, I feel it's possible. There's no leap in science needed to do anything that was shown there.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, this exists if somebody wants to put these pieces together like this.
Yeah, I think the only thing, the way I think anyway, is that you'd need more computing power to do the AI. I think, you know, we got a lot of computer power, and I don't know what it would take to do that kind of, that level of, you know.
But the whole house was like a black box. Could have had like Cray supercomputers there.
Yeah, true.
You don't know what he's operating on.
He was setting up server racks at the end. That's what got blown up in the explosion. Those were server racks he was installing. So, you know,
I have a question for you guys. The killer robot Ares, that was not controlled directly by Tao, correct?
There was times it looked like, or maybe gave him orders.
Yeah, it seemed to be kind of autonomous itself, right?
Yeah, it seemed to have an independent program.
So was it intelligent? That's my question.
No, I would not say that was a sentient, intelligent piece of technology.
Then why, when Tao was getting tortured, did it look away?
Oh, you didn't watch this movie close.
Each time when he zapped Tao, the light dimmed and its head would turn away from Tao.
Boy, and I missed
that. I
thought
that was very interesting, but they never followed up on it. So I wondered if there was going to be something that the whole ending would be that Ares would be the one that would save her from the house or something, but they didn't do that.
Oh, that'd have been an interesting ending.
Yeah, so they they left it kind of unexplored, but I thought that was very interesting and certainly something I wish they had gone into.
Yeah, and potential explanation that I don't like is that, you know, the amount of energy that was being, if Tao was one of the things that could give instructions to Ares, did not necessarily control it, but it was one source of input. It could have been that the energy drain happening on Tao
I would buy that, but that wouldn't make it turn away. Like, it was turning its head so it wouldn't see what's happening.
Yep, I get that. I did not catch that.
Yeah.
Well, let's, they're harvesting, and they didn't go into the details. And, again, it's like a lot of these things probably just as well, because then maybe it would have, spoiled the movie. But they did say that they were putting this thing into their skull. And what were they doing exactly? Harvesting memories, harvesting emotions?
I don't know that they were harvesting them as much as activating them, so they were trying to map the brain. From what I could tell, they were trying to map the brain. The best way to do that was to trigger strong emotions. And so they were tapping into these memories. And that's why, to some extent, that's why they picked these people who were, essentially society's disposables. And the reason you get disposable is because you've been through a bunch of traumatic events. So, that's why they were chosen. And so he knew that he had, those types of memories to tap into, to get to produce those strong electrical impulses that would help him essentially map the brain and then copy that, to his artificial intelligence.
Well, maybe, for the, Ares, maybe they just did got the basic emotion, because this thing wasn't much more than an assault bot. I don't think it did anything else, because you had the little creatures for doing your housekeeping and stuff. This was more a defense thing. So maybe they got this is a prototype leading up to Tao, where they got the basics worked out. He does his job, don't screw with it. So maybe there is a bit of humanity in there if you're mapping the brain, and there's just enough to realize that this could be me next. There could be some either self-preservation in there, not wanting to know what could possibly happen to him, or it could be maybe a little bit of regret in there. It's just,
or maybe somewhere along the way it was programmed to close its eyes and look away in order to and maybe, for all we know, plug its ears to not see that type of, and it's not that it turned away out of embarrassment or sympathy with Tao, but that the psycho programmer had it do that so it wouldn't see that and ingest that information into its own program. I don't know.
That's possible.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. I mean, I remember catching it once because, good Lord, I really need to pay attention to these people's names in these shows. What was the girl's name?
I don't know. Subject number three.
Yeah, subject three.
Julia.
How could I forget that? Yeah. Julia and Alex was the other one. And Julia had noted that as well and taken advantage of it one time when she darted between columns or something while his eyes were Ares' eyes were closed. So yeah, that was the only time I noticed that behavior. I didn't catch it the other times. Interesting.
Well, I was going to say, maybe it's just consistent with, he wanted to control the amount of information that Tao got. Maybe it was the same thing for Ares too. Don't, gather too much. So.
Well, when I say that, it seems bizarre, because what then you would be hiding Ares from is torture. You know what? Right. Ares is pretty good at torture. So I don't know that that's not in his programming already.
But, you know, this is programmed by a guy. It might just be his. And the guy, okay, maybe we should discuss this guy, too, because he's wound more than a little bit tight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think psychopath. I mean, this guy's like a textbook definition of psychopath driven. His self-interest over everything else. I mean, so how much of that would maybe creep into the programming part? Maybe not necessarily the AI part, but the programming part of that. How would that?
Like for a guy who's like, you know, he build as like a Bill Gates or Elon Musk kind of level of intelligence, this guy's got to know there's no way he can get away with this. Because if all of a sudden you introduce a fully functional AI to the world, people are going to ask how you did it.
Have you been watching the news and Facebook?
What? No, I don't.
Just in general, nothing specific, but, you know, these highly intelligent guys who just go do their thing without thinking of the consequences, those people exist.
It's called arrogance.
Yeah,
it's called arrogance. Hubris.
It's okay. Called living in a bubble.
Like that Skrilly guy about who jacked up the prices on cancer meds and stuff like that. Okay, these people are soulless, heartless and everything, but they're still not keeping people prisoner in their basement and murdering them when they're done with them. Like,
as far as you know.
That's a whole different level. You know.
Yeah, do we even want to get into conspiracy theories here? But yeah, I mean, you know.
Obviously, you know, that's the pretext of the movie, is that you have this terrific textbook extreme case of psychopath, genius, all of the things, you know, put all the nasty things in a bottle and call it Alex and, you know, let's make a movie about it. So whether it's actually, you know, like textbook accurate, or you would find that combination of personality disorders in one person, or whether or not it was, hey, let's just talk about the final scene where this house is in the middle of freaking nowhere without a road or cars or anything.
And not to mention, like, why does he go to work? Like his whole work where he's got to develop this thing is at the house.
Can I just ask how he gets his internet? You know, so.
Well, this is in the future, right? They don't say how far, but it's obviously not today. I'm sure like Bill Gates could build a house on the North Pole, and I have no doubt he would have better internet connection than any one of us.
Well,
so.
And remember, Bill Gates did build the smart house.
But he was like, you know, it's just outside Seattle or something.
Right.
So like, he could build a house on the moon,
right?
And have like the best internet connection going, right? Like if you have that kind of money, like that's not an odd.
Yeah, so that was, I mean, there was a couple of things in here where you were just kind of, it was carried to extremes, but the things that they carried to extremes were done purposefully, I think. I suppose somebody could argue they were done lazily, but I think that's just the world, in order to set the stage for this scenario, that had to be some of the backdrop. You had to be in this isolated house. You had to have this psychopathic dude that's both a genius and a killer. You had to have him be absent during the day so that these conversations could take place with Tao. So, you know, without you take any one of those away and the story doesn't work really, at least not as well.
Yeah. Like, he essentially had to go to work for the story to work.
Right.
Because she needed alone time with the computer.
Yep. Yep.
Well, then, he could have to. Well, his board of directors or whoever those guys were, they were getting kind of antsy. So I suppose he had to go and, you know, quell fires there. And you can only do. He had his. Okay, you know, there was a bit of tech that we didn't get down on our list, but the holographic representation of the board meeting there
is not so far fetched.
No,
at all.
And that was mildly interesting, but still, there are sometimes there's so much you can do in a holographic setting like that. But at some point, you got to look a person, you know, physically in the eye and kind of calm them down and, you know, get them, you know, or in this guy's case, probably put them in their place. I don't know that he would, you know, take too kindly to try to calm people. Do you like just do it?
Well, the thing that happened that again, the movie skirts around, because if you think about it too hard, it kind of doesn't hold up. But he goes to work. If you're going to work, the reason you go to work is because you're working with people. If you just have a computer, you can do that at home, especially somebody with that skills, that those resources. If he was not working with a team of people of some sort, he would not have to go into an office. Or if he was, right. Unless he had some sort of manufacturing facility, you know, that wasn't available in his home. But, you know, the question that was crossing my mind is, he's got a lot of AI going on there. He's talking to this board of directors or executive committee or whatever it was about the progress. And there's a lot of programming that's got to take place. There's a lot of perhaps, you know, if they're building these AI robots, maybe they're, you know, there's, like I say, there's a manufacturing facility that had Boston Dynamics, you know, you got to make your robots dance, that kind of stuff. so there was no hint that he was working with a team or whatever, but I did get to a point where I was watching this going, yeah, there's more than just you working on this project. This is not the lone genius, which, again, the movie didn't address, and to some extent the movie wants you to believe that it is the lone genius, and that as soon as the house collapses on him, oh, spoiler, that the project is over and we're all safe and, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Maybe.
Well, and they also didn't elaborate. I mean, they were making a big deal out of this DARPA contract, but they didn't take the time to say what it was. Was it Ares? Was it Tau? I mean, was it, you know, the intelligent AI, or was it, you know, they never spelled it out. So, yeah, he probably had to go and manage whatever this mysterious, you know, project was.
Yeah, because he was talking about winning a $1 billion contract. You don't get $1 billion to sit in your house and crunch code. You know, you get $1 billion right. to build robots and lead a team of, you know, programmers and electrical engineers and robotic technicians and all of the people that it takes to do that kind of thing.
And also, like, what was the project? Like, he was obviously trying to extract her thought processes and kind of brain structure and all that to make an AI. But was it to put it into something, or was it just to create, like, a better Tau? Like, they never really said what it was.
The only thing that – there's a quote in the show, and I'm glad that IMDb caught this one, because it's one of the important ones. Julia called Tau a cleaning machine. Alex was taken aghast and said, no, Tau is a level 2, fully sentient AI. So even before she started talking to him, he's a fully sentient AI console with natural language processing, transitory, deterministic, and probabilistic decision-making. So that tells you the programming that's going into this. And right. So the mind mapping, that's being used in a different way here, that's taking place is to feed those probably deterministic and possibly probabilistic, I don't know, but to feed data into those three, well, all of those different aspects of the program. You've got natural language processing. Well, if you haven't been exposed to high emotions, you're not going to be able to process the language that goes around high emotions. If I'm not quite sure what transitory means, other than it's, you know, here and
transitory
gone.
Would mean temporary.
Yeah, here then gone. Yeah, deterministic, that's a very mathematical thing. Probabilistic has to do with statistics. So if somebody says something, you have the probability that this is the right response and that kind of stuff, or that this is the context that's going on. You know, it's how you tell sarcasm, one of the ways. But I got the impression that all that data was happening. You know, they're trying to fill in that 5% where Tau was behaving erratically, but by providing the missing data for those four parameters of the program that you just couldn't get through anything other than really high emotion. And, you know, on the upside, at least, well, I was going to say, at least he wasn't down in the basement torturing people, but yeah, he kind of was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so he wasn't inflicting new memories on them. He was simply making people relive old ones through very torturous means.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if we're going to speculate, I'm thinking something maybe along the lines of, you know, some sort of battle AI where you have to function with people who may be under stress, and you have to work, you have to attack an enemy who may change tactics, may be unpredictable, you know, they may be humans. And so you want something that can look, react, anticipate, you know, something like that. And, you know, that's something you can't exactly program. That's something that's got to come organically. And so I'm thinking that's what he was trying to do. And by torturing people, basically, and extracting their memories or whatever, mapping the mind, he was trying to get a cross-section of how the human mind reacts in stressful situations so that it could understand it and, you know, maybe anticipate it and use it to its advantage, if we're going to speculate. But
did you guys think that his method for torturing Tao to get him to behave.
Okay, yes, thank you.
That was counterproductive.
Yeah.
Like if you erase somebody's memory, you're erasing part of their reasoning. Like your reasoning is based on prior experience, and if you start to erase that, you're going to degrade the ability for decision making.
Also, if you're erasing his stuff, aren't you undoing all of the time an effort, you know, to almost what you were saying, yeah. But you've erased all that data that you've collected, all the progress that you've made. So what's the point in that? Secondly, why would that cause pain?
That was another thing. Why would that cause pain?
Yeah, I mean, memories are being erased.
I forget stuff all the time, and while it's inconvenient, it's not painful.
Right, and especially in the case of like a computer like that or an AI like that, if you take away certain things, I mean, does it actually know that anything is missing? You know, it was never there.
It's not a tech movie, but that is it 50 First Dates where the guy, I think I'm confusing two movies, but where the guy erases, he has a painful breakup and he chooses to erase the memories of the girlfriend. And like, you find out it's one of those things, like the solution is, the cure is worse than the disease,
right?
Sort of thing.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. But it goes back to how Tao was programmed, because he seemed to have a certain thirst for knowledge, because once she started, you know, teasing him with books and knowledge and stuff, he wanted to know more. So losing stuff, it wouldn't necessarily be pain. That part may have got exaggerated a bit,
yeah.
I think. But I think it would be. He wouldn't want to do that because he acquired this, and now he's going to take it away.
We have a psychopath here, right? You know, so yeah. It's pointing this remote control at Tao, you know, just, you know, acting like a cattle prod on him, which I think is completely bogus. I mean, the whole business of Tao feeling pain is, in my opinion, ridiculous, but it plays to the movie. But if you actually did want to erase Tao's memories, nuke and pave, start over again. I mean, you would just push a button. It would be like a reboot of the computer, you know, revert.
Okay, can we back up to this part where this guy's a psychopath?
Yeah, I know. I get that.
Okay,
he had to program that, though. Somewhere along the way, somebody programmed the fact that if you point that remote control at Tao and press the button, that Tao is going to do these weird graphic things, and he's going to go, ah, and, you know, code's going to get stripped out. That was programmed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Psychopath. He probably did that for his own purpose, because he probably gets off on, you know, pain and control and everything else. So he may have done that just for his own satisfaction and feedback, because just to have something go, you know, I'm losing my mind isn't very satisfying for a psychopath. He would want the fear and the pain in there. So he may very well have done it not for the programming purpose, but just to satisfy his ego.
That's true, because even at the very beginning, he picked up something, and he has anger management issues.
That's a very
subtle
way to say it.
So I remember there was one time before the house went into Zen mode. I can't remember. It was like he grabbed a steel rod or something, was about ready to kill Julia at that point, until the house went into Zen mode and he relaxed a little bit. So yeah, I mean, you might be right. The whole thing that was going on down in the basement psychopathic level of, you know,
well,
not giving
and
shit.
Then yeah, I had forgotten about Zen mode, but I wonder, did he put that in there because maybe he knew that he could go too far, and this was to quell his urges to destroy what he's done?
Right, and I suspect that's it. I mean, if you've ever programmed and if you've ever worked on a computer and wanted to beat your head on the keyboard,
who says I haven't?
Yeah, I know. Have you seen the scars on my forehead? I could see where. And to some extent, it might be a very healthy response to recognize that tendency in yourself and program something like Zen mode and find something like Zen mode that can pull you out of that frustration and, you know, calm you back down again. So, yeah. You know, that's maybe his counselor suggested that once upon a time.
Yeah, maybe his counselor's in the computer, too.
Yeah, so who
his
knows?
His counselor was subject two.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they said there was 11, so yeah, maybe he took the essence of his counselor and put it in there as part of his, his control part, just to keep from going over that line, destroying his work. And, you know, they didn't elaborate on it. I don't know if they needed to, but they had 11 people, whereas I don't think he's picking these people out for a purpose. I think it's just because, like you say, they were disposable. I don't think he, because he was kind of surprised that Julia had survivor tendencies, that she was, I forget what they used, but they said that she was pretty, was one of the best ones that they've had so far by whatever metric they were using.
He didn't have a lot of criteria. The only criteria was that nobody would miss them if they disappeared.
Yeah, basically a pulse, and they weren't, you know, maybe, you know,
He had a little bit higher, I guess he did have a little bit higher standard than just a pulse, because just a pulse would have pulled out alcoholics and,
sure,
you know, drug addicts and whatever. And from what I could tell of the three that we saw, they weren't that. They were just simply, you know, hard luck folks, you know, trying to get by, but whatever. It's interesting, though, too, that he did say that there were 11 subjects, and the movie gave you the impression that Julia was the most recently acquired one, and she is subject three.
Yes. I thought that was a little weird, too.
We just talk about some of the disconnects in the filmmaking there? That was one. Another one was at the beginning where her makeup, between when she was captured and when she took her first shower, every other scene she had black running mascara, she had no mascara, she had dark shadows under her eyes. Oh, gosh, the black mascara's running all over the places back again. I mean, that is such a – I'm not going to give the filmmakers a pass on that, because that one is so easy to deal with and recognize and make happen consistently. So, I mean, that was one that just took me out of the film every now and then. I just went, you know, facepalm. Come on, people. Get that right. There was a couple other things, too, in there where every now and then the filmmaking was like, you step it up a little, quality control. But again, and in the end of it all, I mean, those are just nitpicky details. The film itself is fine. As a matter of fact, I thought it was kind of a brilliant way to film a cheap film. You found some house somewhere. You rented it out, or, you know, Airbnb'd it for the week. Went in, took two people, maybe four, to do the filming, and that's all you needed. There wasn't a lot of the stuff was done in post-production, you know, computer graphics stuff. And, you know, talk about your cheap filmmaking. It's almost, I don't want to quite call it Star Trek The Original Series level of cheap, but
it wasn't that cheap, though.
No.
I was surprised. Like,
That's because they probably spent it all on digital stuff and post-production.
$30 million or something like that? Yeah. Like, it was way more expensive than I thought. I don't see it right now, but Mike, you normally have that kind of stuff, but I can't remember where I saw it.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it on IMDb.
I saw the budget, and it was substantially more than I was expecting. So.
Yeah. And the names, the actors in this, the only one that I recognize, you know, and I'm not one to recognize actor names, but Gary Oldman was the voice of Tao.
Yeah.
And that's certainly somebody I recognize.
I was mistaken. Like, I thought the guy that played Alex was... I can't remember. He was the actor that plays Hank McCoy in the new X-Men movies, and it wasn't. It's this other guy who was on. He had a smaller part in Game of Thrones, but yeah, the two guys do look. I guess the actor that's in this movie is Ed. I don't know how to say
it. Screen, maybe.
Screen, yeah. And
It says he's known for Deadpool for Ajax.
Oh, yes.
He was the villain in the first
That's
Deadpool.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another psychopath.
He was tripping, you know, that trigger in my head that I've seen him, but yeah, then you go, where? And that must be it, because looking down the rest of his list, I don't watch Game of Thrones. Everything else I'm not familiar with except Deadpool. So, that's got to be it. And he's just, he not to denigrate the guy, but
he's a psycho kind of like in Game of Thrones, too.
Okay, he's found his niche. I hope that's only an act and not anything he draws from. But, okay, yeah, so that answers that question. But, yeah, not too many other people in there. But
just for my personal, so I don't think I'm crazy, Google Nicholas Hoult, H-O-U-L-T. He's the guy that plays Hank McCoy in X-Men, like in the X-Men reboots. And I think he looks just like this guy.
Yeah, I can definitely see the similarities.
Like, though, it wasn't until we were getting ready tonight that I thought, oh, you know, it's a different guy. Like, I was sure through the whole thing it was him. Yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely see the similarities.
Okay, so if they ever need a movie where they have psychopathic twins, these guys have a job.
There you go. There you go. the little drones, I want to go back to them because they were interesting. There's a couple of scenes where I looked at them and went, they had several functions. One of which was at the very beginning, they were responsible for cleaning the place and disinfecting it. I mean, literally, the psycho Alex would come home every day and run his, you know, not quite white glove fingers over every surface, you know, make sure it was all clean. Then this, you know, Ares killed the dude. Oh, spoiler! And made a mess of it. And so these drones were, these little, I'm going to call them the Quidditch drones, had to go clean up the blood and other stuff that was, you know, there. And they just kind of did this random, you know, literally like a Roomba pattern. And I'm looking at it going, you know, there is nothing on that those drones that is built to suck anything up. Where in the heck is this? I mean, what?
Oh, good. It wasn't just me then.
Yeah. So. And then the last thing that it did that I looked at it and went, really? At one point, a drone was used for a replacement part for the server farm the guy was building in the basement and thrown into the corner. So it was a damaged drone that could still function, and not only could function, but could fly and grab a remote control and pick it up and drop it on target. I'm like, you were given those little things just a little too much functionality for their size. I don't think they could do all of that. But they were an interesting visual representation. You know, they served as a wall, too, like a Tholian web. yeah, where they would all – what's the other one? It's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
The Nova Corps.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Where, you know, it's just kind of this web of connected drones that it becomes, it's not a force field, but, you know, a
barrier.
Curtain, yeah, that you can't get through. So, yeah.
Curtain's a good description.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, you know, those little balls of gyroscopic, you know, LED lights are just not, you're giving them way too much power.
Yeah, they were they became kind of the MacGuffin, I guess, of the movie, that they needed to do all these things, so magically it just kind of did. But yeah, because even I was, when he ripped the thing off and threw it in there, I'm going, okay, he just chucked this, I assume it was a wing or something, into his computer, and that just, well, must be a really good wing or something that it can just fit into the computer and do whatever he wanted it to do. Maybe he needed a cooling fan. I don't know what he was doing with it.
Yeah, I have no idea how that particular part would help your server at all. But, you know, again, it really is a huge MacGuffin. As a matter of fact, as we were talking about it, it's just like, man, it sounds like Dobby in Harry Potter. It's like,
oh yeah,
all of these things, and you know, magically Dobby shows up with, you know, like a wand or something, and or a sock, and a sock. Same with these drones. The house itself was interesting. I mean, we haven't talked about the house as a bit of technology. Oh, you know, the other thing we haven't talked about, we'll have to get to that. But the house was, you know, all wired. It was the epitome of smart homes. You had all the lights would change, you know, from one temperature to another. You would have, you know, raise the temperature 4 degrees. All of the, like, the drawers in the kitchen were locked, basically, by, you know, computers, or magnetic locks or something. You know, I mean, there was nothing in that house that was just like what it appeared to be. Everything had smart, even the paint. I did not pay attention to how they were describing the paint on the wall.
That's right.
But there was, I mean, I can get chalkboard paint and I can get whiteboard paint, but this paint was like, touch it and it turns into LED, like, glowy stuff paint. And they had technobabble to go with that. It was some sort of, you know, blah, 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 blah type of paint that would let you do this. I'm like, I should.
I figured you'd kind of go for the paint, because that just kind of seemed like, because you've always wanted the, you know, the big board that you can touch and do things and rearrange things and just be able to go up to a wall and make notes and things like that. Just seems like that'd be your cup of tea.
Yeah, so. They'll finger
painting.
Well,
and not just that, but you could use any surface in the house as a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's one thing I was trying to figure out about this paint, was that, you know, they were doing, I think it was mostly monochromatic, wasn't it? I was wondering, could it function as a screen of some sort, a display of some sort, or was it limited to just, you know, basically light, bright type things?
Yeah, and it was interesting, too, how you would draw on it, and then you would just, like, wave your hand, and it would erase, too.
Yeah.
So there was that. I mean, it was perhaps another MacGuffin, but man, it was cool. Speaking of other cool things, since you mentioned screens, how about that wall screen that looked like it was a window to the outside until you tried to smash it? And all I could think of was Fahrenheit 451. So, yeah, the house itself was kind of interesting.
Okay, now, you know, this is the custodian speaking here now, but the conveniently sized air ducts.
yeah, right. Yeah. I noticed that, too. It's like, wow, you can actually crawl through those.
Hey, you can crawl through all air ducts. Everybody knows that.
Sure, right.
Yeah,
you've seen
always
the
crawling through them.
Yeah, I the air ducts at school, because that's bigger than his house was. And, no, you're not going to crawl through those. I didn't want to think about getting into those things, as God knows. And they were, well, maybe this, we'll give them the benefit of the doubt, maybe this house was new, although he does have a clean fetish. Maybe he sends his drones down the ductwork to clean them up, but they were awfully damn clean.
They really were, and they were sized just right to crawl. Not shimmy, not squirm, crawl.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Speaking of other house technology, we have to talk about the hand print security and how you can spoof that with a dead man's hand.
Well, I'm glad they at least put the part in there about the warmth, because you see so many of these things, they just take a cold dead hand and slap it on there. This at least had the thermal sensing, so they at least had the sense that she had to try and keep the hand warm so that she could fool the system.
Yeah, I remember when Touch ID was introduced by the iPhone, literally everybody in the audience had the same thought about, oh shit, we're all going to be losing our thumbs shortly. And they had said that they had some sort of technology in there that, you know, would not permit a dead or amputated finger from, you know, being able to do that. I don't know if it's temperature. I don't know if it's some sort of, you know, pulse or blood, you know, like the O2 sensor, whatever. I don't know what technology they have to tell them that it is a live thumb, not a dead thumb. But it was interesting to see this, you know, movie try and deal with, you know, how she was going to get out of the house. And she did not balk one second on how that works. Actually, I was surprised too when she was downstairs cutting the guy's hand off. Spoiler, I thought he was dead.
Yeah.
So the fact that he showed up again, it was like you screwed up. You had a Dremel in your hand that cut off his hand. You could have probably finished the job and you're like, you know, pried open his aorta or something, jugular vein. To make darn sure he wasn't moving anywhere ever again.
Because hasn't she seen enough horror movies? If you don't make sure you kill them good and dead, they're going to rise up and come back.
Yeah, it's always the brains. You got to go for the brains.
Okay, what was the other piece of that you were going to circle back to?
That was that handprint technology.
Oh, get that one.
Yeah,
okay.
That part of the house. That, you know, the paint and the lighting and all of the, you know, like the smart kitchen stuff was cool, but that handprint thing was something else. Also, the whole keep the secrets in your bedroom type thing, why would you program a self-destruct code? I should have paid attention to the number.
If you're a murderer.
Well, yeah, like, there's that.
Yeah, evidence, you know. They never said what they did with the bodies, but possibly once he's got this perfected, he wouldn't want anybody getting a hold of his trade secrets, I guess. So if you have it functioning somewhere else, you destroy the original. Yeah, and again, you know, psychopath, you know, let's not gloss over that
right,
too much.
Yeah.
Control.
Egotistical, megalomaniacal psychopath too. So yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, you pretty much
I'm starting to get the idea this guy's not very nice.
No.
Really, you think?
Yeah, he kind of ticks all the boxes in your whole psychopath, you know, like I said, megalomaniac and all that good stuff. So yeah, he's pretty much got his bases covered there. So
I have never seen the movie Silence of the Lambs because I'm too busy watching sci-fi.
Have
you guys seen that?
Oh, it's so good.
I know.
Yeah.
So
long time ago.
The little I know of it from just hearing people, are there parallels between that movie and this one? I have no idea. I just know psychopathic killer.
Really.
Okay. Then I need to go watch that movie, obviously.
Well, outside the manipulation part, but I mean, again, that's a staple of psychopaths.
Right.
But
the thing that came to my mind as I was watching this was the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Okay.
Just
that
basically
would probably be closer because look she's obviously on at least on the autism spectrum, and you would probably say that this guy is as well. Like, he's obviously like Asperger's or autistic or something like that. Right?
I wasn't going to compare her. I think it's, what's her name? Lisa? I can't remember her name. Anyway, the girl.
Lisbeth,
there you go. Lisbeth in the book or the movie, movies. But the guy who, in the end, at least in the first book, I understand there's more than one book, but at the end of the first book, they uncover the killer of somebody's sister, whatever, the reason they were out at the island. I can't even remember the details. But it was, once again, it was torture chamber in the basement, psychopathic killer who's functioning in society to some extent, but has, you know, like picking up societies, what he considers societies, disposables, or, you know, basically women. Yeah, that whole manipulation and perfection in the house, the whole, you know, notice anything out of place. So there was times when I was watching this movie going, I think I've seen this set before, the whole kitchen scene and some of the basement stuff. Not literally, but it brought back those memories.
Well, now that you mention that, it's been, oh man, several years, because I think I listened to all of the those books. And yeah, now that you say that, yeah, I do kind of remember some of that stuff. Yeah, there's similarities, you know, between this character and the one from the books there about, and like I say, even kind of the OCD, I think, is, you know, I think that's on the autism spectrum there somewhere. So the OCD and the control and all this stuff. It's all there.
Yeah, and that's basically just kind of the characteristics of psychopaths, I think. You know, that's what makes you a psychopath.
So I think we've pretty much covered all the tech. So if you could pick one piece of tech from this movie, what would it be, Julie?
I'm torn between the paint or towel. The paint would be awesome because, you know, I've threatened to paint the inside of the house in whiteboard paint or chalkboard paint anyway. But the reason I say towel is I don't necessarily need somebody to, you know, be at my beck and call and wish me good morning and all these other things. But the whole, I remember the scene of Tao and Julia sitting in the library reading books, and basically it's the friendship that was building there, and that would be interesting to experience, you know, right. Basically becoming friends with an AI,
yeah,
or helping it grow.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike?
Well, the cleaning drones have a certain appeal. yeah, so says the custodian.
I was going to say, brilliant.
Yeah, well, then it might put me out of a job, too, maybe. But and like I said at the beginning of the show here, you know, I'm only a few devices and probably a few million dollars away from what this guy is trying to do, because I like the whole, you know, automation thing. I'd like to be able to coming in the house and telling whichever digital assistant to turn on the lights or to, you know, play, you know, music or whatever. So, you know, like I say, I'm not, but I would like, maybe not from this movie. I guess what I would really like is that these devices, we get to the AI part of this stuff, because right now talking to these things is sort of like programming a computer. You have to say a certain phrase in a certain way. And one thing that drives me nuts is I have on a playlist on Pandora called Thumbprint. Well, if I don't say it exactly the right way, then the Amazon assistant will say, "Do you want me to create a playlist called Prince?" I go, "Oh, god damn it, no." yeah, so I would like not necessarily, you know, Tao per se, but the AI where we get natural speech recognition, where, you know, I want to listen to some music. What do you want to listen to? You know, I feel like in the mood for some, hair metal or something like that. Well, how about this playlist? You know, something where it's more conversational, where, you know, I don't like having to remember, you know, specific commands. I want to be able to just walk in and say, I want this, and, you know, it somewhere between figures out and understands what I'm trying to say. And if it can understand what I'm saying half the time, it's a damn good AI. Right. But, you know, that's what I want. The intelligent, not too intelligent, because I don't want it to take over, lock me in the house, and make me do weird shit. But I do want that AI that's a little bit more intuitive.
Cool. That I was going to say Tao, but I'm very, very tempted because I'm extremely frustrated with my Apple TV and with Siri, because they never,
oh god,
you know, get me. They never understand. Maybe it's my Canadian accent that they can never fully figure out or whatever. But yeah, so that's very frustrating. But I think I would probably just take Tao overall. That would be my pick. You guys have any final comments for the movie? Like, would you guys recommend this to people?
I would. Yeah. For, you know, those people who like science fiction. You know, there's not a lot of drama in here that's not going to appeal to science fiction folks.
We were visiting my sister in London when I watched this last week. And while my sister was getting supper, my sister and my wife were getting supper ready in the kitchen, and they were both watching it as well. I don't think they enjoyed it as much as I did. But but I think that they didn't dislike it.
True.
So I think it's an interesting movie.
Yeah. And for a Netflix original, I'm like, keep it up, Netflix. More, yeah. Bring more.
It's not rated very well on Rotten Tomatoes.
I know. I look at some of those. I'm like, what are you talking about? I have no idea what they were talking about.
It's better than those ratings. Yeah. Would imply.
Yeah, I think the ratings was like 4.8 out of 10. And I'm like, no, this is a strong 6, almost 7.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It was about a 6, maybe 6.5 or something.
Yeah.
Well, now I just want to double check here once. It's rated higher than the Titan, so we're okay. That's kind of our yardstick now for Netflix movies, which as long as it's better than the Titan, it's an okay movie. So yeah, there we go.
No doubt.
All right, that wraps up this episode of Sci-Fi Tech Talk. You can check us out at scifitechtalk.com or follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Tech Talk. If you have ideas or comments, please send them to greetings@scifitechtalk.com. And reviews on iTunes are always welcome. Julie, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Julie Kuehl, JulieKuehl. And links to the other blogs, podcasts, and whatever else I've got going on can be found at about.me/JulieKuehl.
All right. And Mike, where can people find you?
I can be found on Twitter at DSC Chipman, and I also have an about.me page at about.me/Mike McPeak. That's MCPEEK. And then you can also, if you want to hear more, you can go over to geekiestshowever.com and listen to what we have to talk about. That it'll range from computers to sometimes we get into a little bit of garden stuff or household stuff. Whatever we want to geek out on, you can go over there and listen to us and see if there's something that intrigues you.
All right. And people can find me on Twitter at Bronco Sire. That's S-Y-E-R. And our next episode, we'll be covering the 2018 movie Annihilation, which if you want to watch it, we've figured out is on Netflix in Canada and on Amazon Prime streaming in the U.S. And the IMDb synopsis is a biologist signs up for a dangerous secret expedition into a mysterious zone where the laws of nature don't apply. So that's it for the show, and we'll see you in the future.
It's the Sci-Fi Tech Talk.